Hello, friends. Welcome to the End Evil podcast. This is Chris Jansen, and evil is the destruction of freedom. We got kind of a hybrid show today. It's going to be a live presentation. I have a pre-recorded presentation that I'm going to play it for you folks that I'm going to start in just a minute here. And we're going to watch that for about a little less than 30 minutes. And then I'm going to come on live. And I got Jerry with me in the studio tonight. And we're going to talk about what does it mean to be a good Samaritan? And this is a part of a longer series we've been working on about studying symbolism on symbology. And we're all becoming experts at symbols, those of us who are watching and being part of the End Evil podcast. And so thanks, folks, for joining. And evil is the destruction of freedom. I'll go ahead and start this 30-minute presentation that I've prepared for you. And then me and Jerry are going to jump on and we're going to do some live convo and discussion and research more on this topic. So here we go. With the End Evil podcast, evil is the destruction of freedom. So I'm back this week with another presentation. We've been working on symbology, studying symbols. And a few weeks ago, we studied the parables of Jesus. We've looked at a couple parables of Jesus on past weeks. You can check out the Kingdom of Heaven about the mustard seed. It's a really good one. And this week, what we're talking about is the Good Samaritan. And this is a great allegorical story and a great parable. And I'm excited to share it with you today. We're going to expand on some thoughts and do a live bit. But first, I just kind of wanted to lay down for you the basics of what this parable is all about. Parable of the Good Samaritan. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So, too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said. "And when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense that you may have." Now, which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." And Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." So, it's a great allegorical story. And I like it because it's all about taking action. You know, the first two religious people, he purposely called them a Levite and a priest to give you the impression that these people were supposed to be holy men. And they both just walked by this naked, beaten man who needed help and left him for dead. And they were just like thinking it wasn't their job, somebody else's job. And I really like this story because it's all about taking responsibility, and it's about what it means to be human. Instead of many religious, where one of the places religions go wrong, from my interpretation, is that often there's this idea that you don't have to be personally responsible, you just give everything up to God. But that winds up being like a way of getting out of doing things for a lot of people. And the story, if you really look at what it's saying, it's about taking accountability, and it's pointing out that every single person is responsible. The first person to come along to a problem is the person that should be dealing with it. So the neighbor was the, you know, the one that made that correct choice. It brought up in my mind the concept of the Samaritan, and I did some research on Samaritans, and it's a very interesting thing that in that ancient times, apparently the Samaritans were not kind at all to Jesus, and they were adversarial towards the Jewish people, apparently, according to some sources I found on the internet. But it brings to mind this concept that if you look right now at the Holy Lands, and there's ancient rivalries. There's people that have so much hatred for one another based on their different belief systems and their different cultural backgrounds, and there's things that go way back in time that they're still upset about, and I'm sure people are upset for good reasons, but it just goes to show how these systems of belief and religion have created a lot of violence and a lot of ancient rivalries where people are fighting with one another and maybe even fighting within themselves for based on beliefs, not based on necessarily truth. But the important concept of the story here is the big question: what does it mean to be a neighbor? And we're going to look a little bit at the derivation and the meaning of the word neighbor, but it basically, for all intents and purposes, means someone that lives near you, a dweller nearby. And so, how are we supposed to live in this world is really the question, because we're always going to be living around or near some other people. And so what does that mean? And I'm suggesting that it means that we have to take responsibility for each and every person around us. And it doesn't matter if you're a Levite or a Samaritan or a Jew or whatever you are, it's your responsibility to deal with and to care for people. And people are valuable whoever they are, wherever they are, and whatever their race, color, creed is. Someone who actually cares about life itself, who's actually in alignment with natural law, in other words, someone who's trying to live their life in such a way where they are aligned with the generative principle, is a person that understands the value of a human being, the human being's life. And if any person were to find another person, the goal would be to automatically be a neighbor and to just care because someone needs help, not because they're your same type of person or they look like someone you want to help. And so I think this brought to mind this idea of confidence versus humility. Oftentimes we see people in positions of authority or religious authority, people in certain positions of power or a place where a lot of people look up to them, they tend to get this hubris, this confidence that they know better than others. And I think that can be a good thing in some ways because, you know, when you want to go to someone for help or to get some advice, you want someone who's confident. But what happens when that person becomes revered as a holy person or looked at as more than just your average person? They lose that humility that they could be the person on the side of the road beaten and bloody, and that that could be any of us. And in fact, well, when we look a little deeper into this symbolic story, we're going to see that this can actually be looked at as how we treat ourselves too, because there's parts of ourself that get beaten and bloodied throughout life through the tough roads we're on. And it's up to us to be the deacon of our own self and to give ourselves that care we need going forward. So there's many levels, as we've talked about in the past, of how we can look at these parables. We can look at them on a societal level. We can look on them on a personal level. Or we could look on them as a community, you know, or the whole world. But, you know, one of the themes we're always going to see when we're talking about natural law in the modern day and morality and symbolism is the problem with authority. One thing I tied together, I was thinking about in this presentation, is the there was a big fight between the Jews and the Samaritans about the rebuilding of a temple. And I have somewhere the name of that temple written down. And, you know, there was at one point, apparently, Samaritans offered to help rebuild this temple, and their help was not wanted by the Jews. And then later, they, at some point, the Samaritans desecrated, so goes the story, with bones, the religious site of the Jews. And so there was this sort of animosity going on. But it also occurred to me how many times they're building these castles, like, or these churches slash castles up on top of a hill, and it's supposed to be this grandiose thing with these columns, and it's just like these huge stairways, and it's all to make you feel very small, so that the person who's standing at the head of the fancy building, you know, gets this extra respect because that's where they are in this position of authority. And flags, colors, fancy hats, all these different ways of making people seem bigger and better than just your average human being. And when that all comes down to the allegory of the parable, you see how Jesus is saying, you know, it doesn't matter who you are, what your stature is, any of us can be this guy on the side of the road, or any of us could be the one walking by deciding to help or not help. But what is the progression that we see happen in the world? What in the world we see now, there's many cities that lots and lots of people. And you hear these stories of maybe someone getting... I remember a famous story in New York City, a woman getting raped on the side of the road, and all the cars, people in the cars just sitting there. Everybody thinks it's somebody else's responsibility. The bigger a city gets and the more crowded in people get, the more possibility there is for people to lose that aspect of care. And we also have this thing where people start kind of joining different gangs of belief, different gangs of authority. You know, of course, the authoritarians always want to rule over everyone, but there develops in any big city or what, like we see with the varying religions. I had no idea just how many different divisions there were within the Jewish people, like these Samaritans were a branch from the original 10 tribes of Israel, supposedly. So the story goes when I was doing research on the internet. But it just goes to show that every religion I've ever seen has branches and branches from those branches. And it looks to me like there's this kind of a growing animosity that happens when people try to support these belief systems. Because eventually they start disagreeing on the finer points of one particular rule or another, and they all want to kind of go a different way, and then there's disagreement or hatred from one group to another. So it seems important in the story that Jesus chose the Samaritan because it was there was this, you know, conflict between the Samaritans and the Jews, and so he would have been the least likely to help this guy, and yet he was humble enough to put aside their cultural differences or you know, that's part of the point of the story, is it doesn't matter who it is, even if the person you're supposed to hate, you should be helping them. But it also kind of pointed out to me how these structures of religion, whether it be the actual physical structure, like I was saying, where they build, you know, columns and stairs and try to make this stuff really fancy to where it's so valuable that your life is devalued around this thing that's worth so much more you than you are. The temple building process can be divisive, and this could also be talking about metaphysically. We're talking about the structures that are built around religious thoughts and belief systems. You know, it's one thing to just have a feeling or understanding that there's a greater spirit and we're trying to learn about the right way to be, but it's another thing when someone starts laying down the law and says, no, we know what it is, and you all should follow our rules, and we're going to build this temple here, and you need to all come, give money or put your head down and pray in front of it. And people do that. They like that. It gives them comfort. But I'm suggesting in this presentation that this is a divisive process. When people worship or pray, and they still are breeding hostility within their ranks towards another type of people, or thinking they're holier than thou, that their way is right, there's automatically this assumption that some other people are wrong and are not doing it correctly, and need to be corrected. And it's just a matter of time till there's a battle or a fight when people keep reinforcing their beliefs being better than others. And seems like so often in all of these religions and these religious ways of thinking, there's a tendency to kind of like set up hostility against the other group that thinks differently. And which makes me think that anybody in a group that does this isn't getting the bigger picture, because why would morality be about your way of seeing it better than other people seeing it, and they should die or bow before you, you know, or not get helped when they're sick or dying because you disagree with their ethics on a thing. So what it really comes down to is that so often in history, these religions, whether it's Christianity, Catholicism, Islam, all of these religious people in time have used their belief system to control people. And there's an arm-in-arm, peanut butter and jelly relationship between kings, religion, and power. And I call it the king of the mountain, you know, and they always want to build a bigger tower, build a bigger castle, so they can look better and more fancy and get more respect, and then tax people more for their big castle they built. So the whole situation sets up for this sort of immoral way of thinking. And this can also represent materialism, you know, like basing the beliefs and the thoughts on the exact words in the book, which are things like, you know, you're wearing the wrong colors on the wrong day, or you're supposed to go to on a hike to Mecca at a certain time in your life, or, you know, these type of like requirements about weird specific details that don't actually pertain to morality necessarily, but they're scripture based. Over time, you would think that humans, through various religions, would start to see the commonalities in all different types of moral structures and try to base their decisions off common day-to-day, how to be a good neighbor type of thinking. But over and over in time in history, we see that instead it's this temple-building, authority-growing, warmongering type of situation that seems to develop. And we're trying to look at why is that? Why is that cyclical trauma that affects people for generations and generations, creating more wars, takeovers? Why were there robbers on the road in the first place? You know, people that are hungry or desperate because some king or some ruler doesn't allow them to roam freely, or they can't farm, or they can't hunt in one area because it's owned by someone else. Not to say there's just thieves. Sometimes people become thieves, but I would even say most of these situations, the reason people are that desperate or that immoral is because their family before them faced the aftermath of some trauma. They were defeated, destroyed, made into slaves, beaten down into where they weren't accessing their higher processes in their mind, and then they treat other people the way they've been treated. So recognizing the cyclical trauma that affects us through the generations can help us to understand part of what was going on there in the story in the parable Jesus was telling. You got this long animosity between people, and you got people that will just do whatever they need to get, rob someone's clothes or steal, you know. So he's pointing out the importance of being neighborly. But we see over and over where these, whether it's the Levite or the priest, like I was saying, these people that run the religious structures often wind up basing their decisions and their groups more on their own ego and thinking they're so valuable. You can tell by the way they dress, like I said, the way they... and I'm all for beautiful architecture, and I think it can be inspirational to have beautiful architecture and cathedrals and such. I'm not saying that's necessarily bad or evil, but I'm just kind of noticing this trend and how, you know, like things we still see going on in the Middle East. Obviously, people aren't making moral decisions. They're not being neighborly. There's people that are living right near them, and they're trying to find ways to bomb them or kill them or hate on them because they don't share the same views. And then, like I said, there's this cyclical history of violence between these different groups. Often many of them are the same, from the same area, so really have the same ethnicity in so many ways. And that gets often very confused, like, you know, people use the word anti-Semite or anti-Semitic, which, you know, all Jews are also Semitic people. Semitic has to do with the Middle Eastern area and everybody from there. It's not, it's only become a slang term against Jews because certain people have taken it that way because their ego and getting triggered. And now that word means a particular thing that's not actually its definition if you look it up. So what does this mean for us as human beings? Just kind of symbolically, think about yourself in a situation where you could be helping somebody, like the guy who got beaten. Are you too tied up in your own ego, thinking you're better than other people, or you're too good to do something to help another person? Or are you the kind of person that's going to help somebody out when they need it because you're a good neighbor? Ignorance. Ignorance truly is evil, and many people think, if you don't just know about something or you pretend you don't know about it, then you can just pretend it's not your problem. But the truth is, the universe, God, other people, life itself, knows. And when you ignore problems, they just keep coming back. They keep showing up in different ways. They rear their ugly head and they come back and get you. So if you were to just be these guys who just walked by the person that needed your help, you know, that person might never know. But you know deep down, and the spirit knows, your God, you know, inside of you, the great all knows. And whenever we don't take care of things right when they happen, that's how problems get worse, and they multiply, snowball, just like lying. One lie leads to another lie, and the more that people ignore problems, the more they allow problems to continue, which is much like the problem we have in the modern world of the subtle mind slavery and authoritarian systems of government that are enslaving all human beings by people continuing to ignore them and not see them as big as problems they really are. We're allowing them to get stronger and little by little defeat us and destroy us. So we don't want to ignore problems. The best way to deal with problems are to face them head on, and right when we see them, to just get in there. So what does it actually mean to love your neighbor? Is it all smiles and rainbows? You know, this picture shows these guys like water sprouting from their hands. It's kind of silly, but realistically, the truth is that we can have good trade. We can have good relationships with neighbors. We can see different times and different places where people do get along quite well, and they have reciprocal relationships, and you don't want to damage the other person because they have something you need, and you don't want to be damaged yourself. So we can all drink from the same well, knowing that none of us want to poison the well. But we also all have to be somewhat willing to train in our own self-defense and how to work together when there is danger, because that's the big fear of everyone. You know, some outside force or some group is going to gain power and take us over. And without government or somebody else having responsibility for it, how are we going to deal with these situations? Well, if in our communities we make sure we're very careful in every energy transaction, every time someone gets beaten, everybody around is dealing with it. And like, why? Why is that person getting beaten? Where are the people that did it? Why? Let's deal with them. if everybody was taking responsibility like the Samaritan, we could have a very productive society. We could have a fruitful relationship with our neighbors if people kind of had that same level of expectation of how problems need to be dealt with and not ignored. And we need to deal with them on an individual basis rather than expecting, you know, some other group to do it for us. So basically what that comes down to is just like the story of Jesus going on the cross, which is another symbolic representation of the truth, all level of freedom requires some level of sacrifice. If you want to put out your hand to help somebody, you know, like the guy in the story, the Samaritan had to, he had to give up some money. He had to go to the innkeeper and say, like, here's some money, take care of this guy, call me if you need more. You know, like, he had to really follow through, and that cost him his hard-earned money, and maybe he didn't have that. We don't know. But the story doesn't say, if you have enough money. The story says, do what you got to do what's right. And that always, there's going to be a level of sacrifice of energy, time, money to do the right thing. And that's what scares people off from doing the right thing. They want to, it's easier just to hate someone and to ignore them or stay away from them. But it's like you're not recognizing that if we don't have that peace in ourselves, in our neighborhoods, within our communities, then we're just bringing children into a world of war and setting them up for trauma. And really, what that comes down to in so many ways, outside of the whole big picture with laws and government, we can't change that all right away. But what we can do is become whole people in our own right. And that means that each of us are careful how we treat ourselves. And so think of these two men shaking hands, or the Good Samaritan and the beaten person, as two aspects of your own self. There are times when you get damaged, when you feel beaten down by life. How do you treat yourself? There's times when we've been traumatized in the past, and the temptation is to keep taking that out on other people or to blame other people, when in truth we have to find this peaceful place within ourselves and find a way to make right the things that have gone wrong and put aside our differences. And so it's a journey that begins within of each of us. And then outside of that, it's the recognition that each of us are part of a greater whole, and we are interconnected to all the other people around us. Even if we disagree with them, even if we don't like their politics, we still have to be their neighbors. And so what kind of neighbor do we want to be? It's one thing to be critical of another person. It's one thing to think that they should do something different, and it's another thing to try to force them to do what you think they should do. What we're advertising with natural law is to not coerce people, but instead teach. And that's why we create presentations. That's why we explain things. That's why we look at symbology. That's why we're trying to understand ourselves in a very deep way, so we can see the shadows, we can see the light, and we know the difference, and we can discriminate in times of trouble. Hey, what's really the most important thing here? And that's really what I want to challenge you folks with today. And that's a good point to stop this presentation and open up for a little more research and conversation. Check out endevil.life, folks. And if you haven't yet, join the email list or make a small donation at endevil.life. And much appreciated. We're working towards a new camera right now because this old USB cam's about shot. Sometimes it just turns off. That's frustrating. But yeah, thanks for listening, and we'll move on to the next part of the show. Thanks. And I'm back. And I got with me today in the studio my man Jerry. Thanks for joining me, Jerry.
How are you doing today? Hello,
hello. Yeah. Very. What'd you think about that Good Samaritan presentation there? How'd that hit you?
Oh, man, you made really good points. And I think the images were on par. I don't know how you do it, man.
Thanks. Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it. Yeah. Anything really stick out for you there, though, in the thought process and the ideas of the Good Samaritan?
Well, I mean, I kind of just think about the last slides, I guess, because it's like the people coming together. And they really, I mean, we're all human, right? It's like we should unite. And if aliens came down here on Earth and they saw like government, they would be like, yo, why are they doing that to each other? And like we have all these like little differences that can be resolved. And I really like this parable because it's like, all right, when it comes to real life issues, like we can come together, right? And the other people that just kind of like walk past him, they're like, oh yeah, God will take care of it. But I mean, wouldn't you rather know that he's taken care of than just leave it up to like, I don't know, chance? So the fact that the third person, and I don't know if that's like a synchronistic or something, like it
Oh
takes three times.
like walking in the third person, looking at, thinking in the third person, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh.
He was all taken care of. I mean, it was really cool with the oil and the wine. Like I really was like getting into that, just like being there and like taking care of your neighbor. Like we're all gonna have some sort of neighbor. So it's like, why not just treat them well?
Yeah, I feel like this Good Samaritan parable, like it's like kind of like the golden rule, all summed up. It's very much natural law. It's like if you think about it outside of just them being people, the concept is like doesn't matter which person it was that came down the road. Jesus was saying basically like it was the responsibility of everybody, and the only one that was the neighbor, was the one that made that choice to treat the other person as if it was yourself, because that's really what the neighbor means. It means somebody that might as well be you. I actually looked up neighbor. Maybe you want to check that out, Jerry. Maybe we can bring that up on. Let's look up some words. If you want to bring up your share screen, I looked up the etymology of neighbor and the definition. Neighbor is pretty basic. Like I didn't find anything that really shocked me right there. Let's see, we got the super screen going. I'll turn that back off till we get that figured out. But yeah, I looked it up and it wasn't anything really far out. But I think it basically means something like nearby proximity, something like that. Let's see, were you able to do that? You get it going on? Oh, you're getting the infinity screen there.
Can you,
Oh, there you go. Now you're
is it
talking.
fixed?
It's working now. Yeah,
All
looks
right,
good.
awesome.
Yeah, let's
So
see.
what?
Let's first just look at Edom Online and see what they got to say about neighbor. Yeah.
Neighbor.
All right, here we go. It says, near basically is ni, which NEIGH, near, and a dweller. Bur is a dwelling. So it's just all it means is a near dweller. What that means to me, like when you think about it symbolically, is that it might as well be you. It's a reflection of yourself. Leslie says, seeing yourself from the third person perspective is a way of witnessing yourself. That is essential for knowing oneself, and that can help build compassion and empathy for yourself and others. Well said, Leslie. And, Leslie or Derek, anyone that's in the chat, if you guys want to join us for a little bit here and conversation, I could put the link. If there's anybody else out there that wants to kind of join and chat with us on this topic, I'll go ahead and put the link in the chat. But Jerry, why don't you go ahead and bring up something else on that list of our research there, and we'll kind of look into some other aspects there. Let's maybe just start at the top of the list of some of the stuff I sent you.
All right, give me 1 minute.
Yeah, no, hurry, you're good. And I got the slides in front of me too, some of the background slides, which if that, any of that helps us at a certain point. Invite guests. Okay, yeah. If anyone's set up with a mic already and they got some earphones and the whole bit, here's the link in the chat if you'd like to join us in conversation about this topic. But we're going to just figure we kind of go over some of the research that I did in the week leading up to this presentation. And I think that process of how we research and how we think about things is good to share online, because everybody kind of has a different way of going about thinking about things. And I think this process of kind of taking apart all the pieces of a story and regurgitating it and re-looking at it can be very educational. I've learned a lot from that process myself. It looks like we got Derek joining us here too. Cool. What's up, Derek? Thanks for joining us. You got any thoughts on that little presentation we just shared?
Yeah. That was great.
Love to hear what you got to say.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah. Just summing off, the whole neighborly good vibes and all that stuff. And for me, it kind of stems back to, just that Christ consciousness and how it kind of stems from, oneself, properly knowing oneself, getting into that higher state of awareness and knowing that, hey, like, I should probably treat myself good. And hey, like, if that could be extended to other people, and that has like a positive rippling effect and all that good stuff, you know? And, like Jerry would mentioned, that was really cool. I was actually doing a live stream. I was trying to cut that shit short.
Oh yeah. I saw your live, red stripe on there. Yeah. Leslie was asking if we could bring up the please, parable on the screen. So I'm going to try to find that, but go ahead, Derek, finish what you were saying.
Yeah, it's I like the fact that you brought up the you saw my comment with the whole anti-Semitic and all that stuff, and I try to be cute with it and say like, well, I'm just anti-pathetic, because when you got to realize the real lies of that kind of semantic way of, you know, putting it and how you've seen it in context of, you know, people throwing it out. Just like anyone, any day of the week these days in recent years of like, oh, that's racist, you're a bigot, you're a sexist, whatever, you're anti-Semitic. For like the slightest thing that might go against their, you know, bias or, you know, predisposed, you know, belief systems and all that jazz. And it sucks that these terms are watered down and they don't really get to the root of the etymology of them, right? And so, yeah, Chris, your whole series is great with the whole, you know, just going over the symbology. You know, this is really 101 for a lot of people. And, you know, myself included, we all need this to keep it in the forefront, because these are, subversive measures that are used against us in so many ways throughout so many days, right?
So many ways, so many days. Check this out, a little alignment I noticed too. You know, we were in the Warriors, we were doing the thing about the zombies, and he left him half dead was the way the story goes. And it's very specific, it says it that way, you know? And it just occurred to me that could, you know, potentially have a deeper meaning that, you know, if we don't, instead of thinking of, this is the way I like to use these parables, it doesn't always have to be about people outside of us. The parable itself could be describing dynamics happening inside of us, like I called our kingdom of heaven, right? And what that could mean is there's parts of us inside of us where we get damaged by our own, the part of ourself that takes away, you know, like, you know, that part of our mind that is always like talking smack, says like, oh, you're not good enough. You know, you should have done things better, right? Sometimes we get beat up and stripped by our personality inside of our own brain, right? And so then that's kind of how we end up half dead, you know, because we're stricken, right? We've been robbed of our personality, of our life energy, because in many ways we're doing that to ourselves by submitting to the slavery of this world, by being part of these governmental gang systems that are immoral and submitting, right? And we become, like we talked about in the zombie episodes, half dead. So we need to become that good Samaritan in our own self that recognizes this, sees it for the truth that, like, man, I'm in bad shape. You know, I beat myself up and I've let society beat me up psychologically. I've been beat down and I need to like raise myself up and give myself some time to heal. And you know, it's crazy to what extent too. He oil and wine, he put this guy up in a room, paid for the next day. Like, he's not just saying care, he's saying go the extra mile, you know? So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, Jerry, I'll let you go. You got anything about those zombies from, you know, last episode?
That was a great episode, by the way. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Oh, looks like Leslie joined us. Cool. Let's bring her on camera. It didn't make that. Normally it makes this little noise. So let me know.
Oh, I was in there for a while.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. No.
Yeah, I know that noise. Huh? Yo, Leslie.
Hey, good to see you.
Yeah, you too.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all, man. Love it.
Yeah, I was thinking about this parable bit. Is it okay if I kind of come back to that?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what I'd love to hear your thoughts. Yeah.
You know, I was looking back at the parable itself, you know, and it talks about loving the Lord with all your heart, your soul, and your strength and mind, right? So it's like this unity and alignment and of loving the Lord, right? But then immediately after, it's like love your neighbor as yourself. So to me, there's a connection that's being made between, you know, the Lord, ourself, and our neighbor, all being of value and deserving of this very clear protection, you know, that you're loving through your action, right? With your strength and your heart, your soul. So it's like and then you will survive. So you survive as an individual, but maybe also as a species, right? As a humanity. And so how important it is, if we want to survive, that we activate love for ourselves and each other as if, you know, we are all, because we are all part of the Lord, right? Of the God. And so I think like this Samaritan and the story, even though maybe the etymology is like a dwelling, I think what the story said is it's like anyone who's near you who needs help, you know, and that, you know, so it was, you know, this passerby that was able to provide love, you know, and care to the person who was injured, right? And other people passed by. And so that Samaritan was representing, you know, that they're more interested in the care of their neighbor than they are for the riches or, you know, lure of wealth or status or whatever, right? So you need all your strength. So I feel like that's, you know, you touched on all that.
Yeah. And, you know, like I was about to launch into, that's like natural law too.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perfect thing to talk about for natural law. Jerry just brought up this website we found, and it's describing a little bit more about the rift between the Jews and the Samaritans. And I thought that might be a little bit of a good education for us, you know, to kind of look at that. You know, I learned a lot about Samaritans. I started doing a little research. Can you scroll up let's see what this says. Apparently, this person says, I've been perplexed by the rift between the Samaritans and the Jews and their hatred mentioned in the New Testament. One incident is Jacob's well. Oh, I don't even know. Oh, I'm not even sure what they're talking about with Jacob's well. That's interesting. We'll have to look that up. Yet in one of the parables, it is a Samaritan who takes care of the victim who's beaten. Oh, they're talking about, is there anywhere in the Old Testament that records the breaking down of Abraham's or Jacob's progeny? And I think what they're talking about is like, apparently, I don't know if you guys ever heard of the 10 tribes of Israel, but further back, the Jews were like one of those breakoffs from an earlier tribes. And somewhere in there, these Samaritans fit in. Let's scroll down a little more and see if it tells us what actually happened. I know at one point there was this thing about the rebuilding of this temple. Let's go down a little more. Okay, let's stop right there, I think. Yeah, okay, so they were the Babylonian exile, right? That's Jews are exiled from Babylon. Does that make sense? The Samaritans were ready to welcome them back. The exiles, however, despised the Samaritans as renegades. When the Samaritans wanted to join in rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem, their assistance was rejected. So that's in the Old Testament. That's what he's talking about. So it goes way back, this hatred between these different people. And for us, it's a little hard for us to understand it because this is ancient issues that people have. I'm sure there's a lot involved, but we can see like right now in the Middle East, there's like a lot of hatred going on between different peoples in the same way. And then we can see it right at our doorstep right now, people arguing over which leader they want and hating each other over, you know, which brand of slavery they choose. It's really an odd dynamic. So yeah, on all that, the Samaritans and different types of people. And before I say that too, here in that last paragraph here, it talks about a band of Samaritans profaned the temple in Jerusalem by scattering bones of dead people in the sanctuary. So, you know, that further added, you know, obviously this thing went back and forth. They did something, the other guys did something. And Mount Gerizim was what I was trying to think of before. So yeah, Derek, you got any comments on all that, the whole concept of these different types of people and hatred between them and all that?
Yeah, so, you know, we hear people knee-jerk reacting towards, you know, conspiracies and all that stuff. And I'm thinking about, you know, I appreciate and love the way you kind of read things and all that. What came to mind was, you know, just like trying to travel back in time and kind of try to observe like what was really going on back then. And like throughout the years of, you know, these ancient tribes and this and that, whoever broke off and this and that, and whoever took record of these things, whether it be word of mouth and all that stuff, especially if they didn't have papyrus or whatever, scrolls, documentation to write things on, that wasn't the most common thing at, what are we talking about? Are we talking about BC or what? I'm not familiar with the time frame of, you know, the Babylonian days, but I think
that would be because all the Old Testament's BC, right? Before Christ, right? Yeah, so right?
I'm not too,
yeah, no, you're good,
but yeah, because yeah, it's, anyways, not like it's all archaic and not worth, you know, looking into at all. Like, I'm not trying to discourage that, but has not been much of an interest to me. I'm more into that natty law and all that, right? Anyway, so yeah, so the word of mouth and all this stuff, passing all this stuff throughout the years, decades, centuries, and what have you, how much is lost in translation? How much is due to manipulation and obfuscation? And so if there was one person that, especially during the times where people were really caught up in dogmatic religious, you know, mind think, whatever, you know, especially the higher uppers, they're going to be like, they come to this realization like, oh my God, like we did this, we got to cover up our tracks on whatever and this and that. So, you know, there's got to be other people that, you know, breathed in on this idea to make it solidified throughout the ages. That's a conspiracy. Wow, big fucking deal. You know, like, get over it and just, like, sit through the facts, through the fiction, and let's carry on and do better than and evolve. You know, this 2024 going into 25, you know, what's good with that real true Christ consciousness that people can really activate within themselves outside of any religious doctrines?
Absolutely. And I think that's part of the point of the story is why he chose this, you know, and why it gets interesting to me to start doing a little bit of research to get some background information is like, yeah, like the other parable we looked at with the mustard seed, the more you learned about the mustard seed and how things were going on at that time and where we're at in the world, it offers a lot more insight. Like, why did Jesus only speak in parables? You know, like, he was being very specific with this stuff. He was trying to make, you know, a deeper point. And so you were asking about the dates. I guess there is controversy, it says, in this article we just found, the origins of the Samaritans in the Hellenistic period, 6th century BC, when the Assyrians destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel. They exiled the upper crust of society. So, you know, it's like I was saying, it goes back to who beat these guys up, you know? And this goes on over and over, like I was saying, the cyclical destruction of culture. One group comes along and says, no, this is the way we interpret the holy divine words. And that's where shit goes awry, is when people are trying to say, you need to believe this because we say it or else. And that's been happening all through time. And then now what do we see in the modern world today is the result of that, like people having these schisms all through time, keeping the hostilities going. And they're still doing it. They're still arguing about dumb stuff. You know, what is the real major difference right now? If we had to explain it, why the wars are going on in the world, would any of us be able to really explain what is the actual problem other than people are idiots? I mean, I don't know.
People are not loving their neighbor as themselves, right? So, I mean, that's the very basic principle there. It's like, see yourself in others and see others in yourself. Have that reflective principle. You walk upon, you know, a man beating another man and being, you know, bloodied on the floor, right? You know that they're suffering because you are human, you know? And so all of this ancient fighting is stupid. You know, it's like just violating this principle of like reflection, self, you know, reciprocity, and at all levels, you know, correspondence within yourself, loving yourself and loving others, loving your neighbor. So if you're not loving your neighbor, you're really not loving yourself. There's a schism, there's an injury, right? There's an injury. And so the injury you're seeing in another should really remind you of your own injury. So how do you heal that? You know, and how do we heal it as a society? You know, we have to love each other, love our neighbor as thyself. I think it's a huge answer.
Can I say something? I got to piggyback on that real quick because, you know, I was injured this summer and there were some living in France, and it, you know, in these times, you know, talking about, you know, the Christ consciousness of 2024, people still have that regardless if they went under the needlecraft or whatever the fuck. I can still see that within people and interact with people that have proper care about certain things. Maybe not all the time. Maybe it's not the biggest deal to fucking worry about as far as, you know, certain things of being able to have a decent relation with other people. So, yeah, like, I had a bike accident where I wasn't paying attention. I was looking at some construction that was new. You know, handlebar hit, you know, some pole, and I literally, like, fell into the street, and there was a car coming on. And luckily, the car saw me. They probably anticipated some shit. But they drove past me. I could have got run over fucking easily, like straight up. Especially if there was some young kids just, you know, trying to, you know, drive off and, you know, living that, you know, that fast life and all that shit. But, you know, so I got up real quick and just bounced back up and all that. And there was like a woman in a car that was driving the other way. And she like stopped and held up traffic. It's like, I saw that. Are you okay? And this night, do I need to call anything and all this stuff? And it's like, wow. Like I wasn't, you know, in the time you don't expect anything, but any little degree of help, can just boost up any kind of, good sentiments and perseverance, I feel as well. And, even though you got that shock going on, the adrenaline rush is like, yeah, you're fine. You might play it down and this and that, but yeah, just like, yeah, it's like my heart goes out to folks like that. And, even later on, like someone saw me kind of limping cause I, you know, had a huge bruise on the, on my inner thigh. But, it's like, are you sure you can go to the pharmacy? It's just right there. You can get some painkillers. Like, oh, thank you. You know, actually, I'm more into like homeopathy and stuff. And we just got into a conversation about that, you know. So it's cool. It's like we don't have to like tell people, you know, what the truth is all the time. We can just relate, as I mentioned last time, of just like how we go about trying to better ourselves and how to heal ourselves. But also be receptive to other people, even if you don't even fucking agree with them sometimes. Just let them speak their piece. Have those two ears and one mouth to, you know, where's the balance? You know what I mean? Like, anyways.
It's in between, right? You know, in between the ears is where we find the balance, right? Those are our extremities, you know, our outer holes of existence, right? You know, and in between, we got to find the center. And in this world, that's so important. Like, even though we don't always agree with people on a philosophy, that doesn't mean that we aren't responsible to help them out or to be there for them. In fact, even more so, I feel like if we want to go out in the world and try to teach like a better way to live morally, then we have to be setting that example in our own lives, you know. And it's cool and interesting. I had a trippy thing happen just this morning. Yesterday I took the day off. I had a rough night, didn't sleep good. I was having some allergy stuff yesterday and was kind of recuperating. And so this morning I get up, I'm going to work. And yesterday I had that chance to put together that presentation we just listened to. So it was on my mind. I was really thinking about on the way to work, the Good Samaritan, and what do I want to talk about tonight? And I come down, I'm about running. I'm actually right on time. I'm about to get to the job site right on time. And the guy I'm working for is really cool, so it's no sweat. But the last turn, I come down, and there's this woman with her son. Not son, it was like a little baby, you know, infant almost. And she's like waving at me. And so I pulled over, and this is out in the middle of nowhere on this country road where I work, out in the near Lake Shasta. It's a beautiful place. And it turns out to be this couple. And it's this black dude from LA, and he was wearing like a hoodie. Like part of me was thinking when I saw them, I don't know, man, these people, they might be a little bit ghetto. You know, I was a little concerned, but she was saying, oh, we need help. We need someone with jumper cables. And I was like, I'll help you guys out. Sure. And, they're like, car was up the road and I drove up and got out and, I was helping him out. And it was funny too, because I couldn't get at my jumper cables and I'm in the back of my car. You know, I'm always talking about self-defense stuff. And I was like, I got like this big old bow staff. I got this knife that's this long that Justice Wagman made for me. And like fighting sticks, like two different kinds of knives. And I'm like looking for my jumper cables. And I'm like, well, if someone did decide to jump me, they picked the wrong fucking guy, you know? But no, it turned out to be this really sweet couple. And I was able to help them. We got their car jumped. And meanwhile, this dude starts up a conversation with me. His name's John. And he's talking all about God and life and the problems in the world and the modern politics. And he's bringing up all these allegories from the Bible and saying how, look, it's happening in front of us, you know, and we had this crazy in-depth conversation, you know, and it all came about because they asked me, hey, can you help me? And I was like, of course I can. you know? And he's like, sorry to hold you up. And I'm like, hey, I've been in your exact spot before. You know, I've been on the side of the road needing a jump and someone helped me out. So, man, I got a lot of stories like that. And I'd love to hear if any of you guys do, or anyone in the audience wants to share. There is just, if you put yourself out there in the world, it's just a matter of time till you bump into one of these situations.
Yeah.
And how far do you want to put yourself? When do you help people? When you don't help people? I'm not saying you need to always help people. Sometimes it is dangerous and you should think twice. But when you have that opportunity, at least me personally, when I have that had that opportunity to give, be a good Samaritan, to do something to help someone, I feel real good afterward, you know? And I feel like it helps. That's what helps the world go around, you know?
I know for me, you know, I've had people stop when I've... when I'm stuck on the side of the road, you know, a flat tire, out of gas or something, right? Or even like I needed to put on, was snowing, right? I had to get on the snow spiky things, you know, to be able to go up the mountain. I'm, you know,
chains,
right? You know, and it's always like such a breath of relief, right? You know, when someone stops to help. But it's also now, you know, the way that I think that some of the programming is, the social programming has made us more nervous and untrusting sometimes. And so some people are afraid of a person stopping to help them and won't allow the help, right? So in order to help, someone has to receive help. And if we're very anxious and fearful of each other, right, which is sort of, I think, kind of programmed in through this media, then people are like sticking to themselves, right? And they're not offering as much help. And like you said, in the cities, that maybe happens more. Somebody's always thinking someone else has got it, right? When that may not be the case.
I think there's also something there about responsibility and people's view and expectation of responsibility. And for some reason, when we live in a more crowded area that's more regulated and there's more authoritarianism already in place, it seems like people that live in those areas are more indoctrinated into thinking that way, kind of robotically, that, oh yeah, no, cops take care of vandalism type problems and firefighters take care of fires and I'm just a regular person. I go to the office. That's what I do, you know?
Just like in North Carolina, hearing stories of
good example.
Volunteers being turned away, you know, or you can't volunteer unless you go fill out 10 pages of, you know, paperwork, you know, that's you have to go to an office somewhere and do it. It'll take you 10 days, you know, whatever. Right. There's a certain pushing away of the Good Samaritan and people who are really trying to be of service and help their neighbor, you know, whether it's fighting a fire or, you know, going in to save somebody who may be trapped, you know, in their house or in a flood. And so it's weird, you know, it's weird to live in a world where it's discouraged to be of help. You know, it's being told, no, that's not your job. It's not your business. Leave it to the officials, the people with the bad
farm, right? They're a good neighbor.
And send us your money every month so that
that's insurance, right?
Yeah,
yeah, we have a song like
North Carolina and all that stuff now.
What'd you say, Derek?
Sorry.
In regards to North Carolina and how so many people wanted to help but got cock-blocked by the government and whatever the hell else, FEMA and all that jazz. And thinking about all these insurance companies that are going to be doing what? Denying things, you know, there's a certain word, you should not say the word flood in regards to, you know, your report towards, you know, the damage that happened.
Here, fire insurance has gone up tremendously.
Of course, yeah, that too, that's obvious. Yeah.
Yeah, people can't afford it. Insurance companies are leaving. People, you know, if you want to live off grid or out in the woods, you know, you may not get fire insurance, so you may not get a loan. Like, it's crazy, yeah.
Well, I noticed a lot too in like the neighborhood I grew up. It was like a big half circle. It was like a horseshoe. And when I was a kid, you go out there and it was like a circus. There was like kids on bikes, kids on trikes, kids on skateboards, kids on you know, every kind of rolling device you can imagine, you know, all the people had to come in there and parked. It was super frustrating for the adults because we were out there playing soccer and basketball and whatever we were playing, beat up each other, you know, pretend gang games, right? But over the years, I lived in that same apartment complex until the point when I was 18. And it was like less and less kids outside. You know, it was like every Christmas. I remember for us, especially like Christmas, all the kids would get their new toys, right? And then we'd all want to go out and play with the other kids to show off our new toys, right? But what do you think kind of kids getting different presents over the years? They're getting video games and they're getting, you know, electronics. And so they're not coming outside. And, you know, like just the lifestyle of people in a lot of the areas I've lived is not neighborly. I grew up in East San Jose, Silicon Valley, Bay Area, a bad neighborhood inside of that. And even though we were in a tight complex, like I'm saying, where all our doors practically face one another in almost a circle, you know, people didn't talk to each other a lot. A lot of people didn't even speak the same language. They all had different religious backgrounds, right? And so when I moved out, when I was 18, I joined a volunteer service and I wound up in Pennsylvania. And in Western Pennsylvania, you talk to everybody. If you meet someone at the gas station, it's like, hey, how you doing? Hey, what's going on? Talk about the weather. You talk about whatever, you know? Even if they're, you know, everywhere you go, you wave. Every time you pass somebody, you wave. And, you know, like if you saw someone on the road, side of the road working on their car, you would just pull over automatically. Like, hey, what's going on? You need help? No, I'm good. I got it. Okay. All right. Well, let me know if you need anything. Or call. You know, let me talk. You know, people are just, and the more I've noticed in the places I've lived, when you're out in the country, when you're out in places where people are a little bit more independent minded and a little bit understand this concept, the, what was that word they had? Ubuntu, I think. Ubuntu, where everybody has to work together to make stuff work, basically. When you live in certain areas, you have to do that. But we've created this modern society where you don't have to do that. You know, there's machines that will take care of it. There's government structures. There's, you know, things in place. And that has debilitated people from understanding what it means to be a human, what it means to be a Samaritan, what it means to understand natural law, as far as that, it's all the same, the golden rule, right? So I'd love to hear your guys' comments on that.
Well, I think it fits very well with the natural law understanding of rights, you know, in that you understand by being, oh my gosh, I get my crazy cat off of me. She attacks me. So if you are, you know, you recognize through your ability to empathize, right, and love thyself and thy neighbor, right, you understand what's wrong, the things that are wrong, which are, you know, murder and assault and theft and rape, trespass, coercion, and lying, right? Because you have the sense of empathy developed through your ability to see yourself in third person, right? That's this concept of being able to pull back and look at yourself from as if you're an outsider and gaining the vision and being able to see patterns. And that's also part of, I think, being able to be a good Samaritan is to, you know, see yourself from a distance and to see what's happening around you, you know, from a third person and looking and understanding, you know, that wrongdoings, you know, that these wrongdoings, these violations of rights are really destructive and it's hurting all of us. So we need to be good neighbors.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris, you brought up some fond memories, man. It's quite emotional. And thinking about today, like, I don't know how it is over there, but it seems kind of rare to see kids hanging out, playing in the streets when the moms and dads are calling them out for dinner time on a fucking Tuesday afternoon, evening, you know? like, what happened? It just seems like we're so far removed from that. Yeah, like the video games and just everything online. All these kids, they want to be going viral and making little TikTok videos and all that stuff as if it's some kind of fucking life achievement, you know? It's crazy, man. It's, yeah, not at all like I remember from yesteryear, but, you know, we got to work with what we got, I guess, right? So, yeah, but I love that small town mentality type of care, or just the in. That's so cliche to say. I'm sorry. I take that back. The whole small town, whatever the fuck. Just like outside of the metropolitan stuff where it seems like, you know, you're living on top of one another. And so it's like people are more disposable, expendable, whatever the fuck. That's just how the conditioning of the metropolitan lifestyle seems to have, especially when the city and, you know, think about, you know, Batman movies with Gotham representing New York City all the time where, yeah, how many people are actually stopping by to say hello to everyone or even stop by and to make sure, hey, are you okay? You know, they stopped on the side of the road for whatever, just to be more curious. And what do we have? It seems, you know, especially you see this in, you know, media and stuff, you know, someone trying to, so you see someone pulled over and let's say it's a female. And, you know, a male stops and like, hey, are you okay? And it's like, oh, get away from me, creep, rapist, whatever the fuck. It's like, you know, what happened to the Good Samaritan sentiments of that? And yeah, it's, we could say it's naive to assume that, you know, people are stopping to, you know, help or whatever the fuck. But geez, yeah, it sucks that, you know, more people aren't just in practice of these things. And I think it just comes with the day-to-day interactions that we have to whatever degree with fucking anyone anyways. And yeah, it always starts with the interactions that we have within ourselves. And people are so fragmented and distracted with the social media effects of everything that they don't even have time to look in the fucking mirror properly at themselves, on top of the fucking rat race and all this other shit that, you know, we grew up with, you know, in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, and I think it really points to the idea of true care. And what do we really care about, you know? And I don't know, you got any thoughts, Jerry, on all things we've been saying? Do you want to pop in on any of that?
I thought you were going to go in for a deep dive after you said that bit about the true care. I think what Derek was saying just now resonated with me. Well, it is a very sad thought how the kids used to play outside and all that stuff, not many devices, and now they're just hooked on it. So, yeah, it is very sad. But what else did you say about the Samaritan? I lost my train of thought, but, yeah, everything that's being said is deserving of re-listening to.
Yeah, no, that's good. And, you know, I'd say for me, when I went through those slides – and kind of like naming the slides, I came up with like concepts, right? Power and authority, personal responsibility versus deferral of personal responsibility, or I called it waiting for God to fix things. And that's a big concept. That's a problem with the religious mindset. And we could talk about that a little bit. But I'd say the one that really stuck out to me the most was the one on ignorance. You know, one of those slides that showed the two guys walking by and they see the guy all beat up on the ground and they're just like, you could tell they're just going to keep walking. And to me, that ignorance is really one of the biggest things that stuck out for me, because people don't think of ignoring things as wrong. They think of it as, yeah, you can do that. You could choose whether you want to engage or not. And really, it is wrong to be ignorant of the problems that are going on in the world right now, because they're so severe that if we're not working on fixing them, then we're actually part of those problems by putting our money and energy into what these evil folks are trying to create for the future, instead of resisting it and working to try to right the wrong that's been done. And so it falls upon us, not like just like, oh, take care of this if you want. You know, like, no, it's not like that. If you care, if you truly care, you don't have a choice at that point. You know, you have a choice of how you go about it. You can do it whatever way you want, but you don't have a choice of not being part of the solution if you truly care. And that is like, sound like the opposite of freedom, but you know, we're bound to freedom. Those of us who truly care, that is the one thing that we are slaves to, is truth and freedom. You know, those principles, right? So I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. Anybody wants to pop in on that topic or idea? I see Leslie's mind going there.
Well, my mind had been somewhere else, and so I was trying.
Oh, I kind of shot you in another direction.
Adapt to your new direction, but it's this application to what's going on in the world now, you know, in the modern life, and you know, in a way, with the internet, we're all neighbors. Like, I feel like I'm Derek's neighbor. He's across the ocean, but we are able to, you know, stay connected with distance, right? We're neighbors in this life. And so I think a lot of people feel very powerless, you know, and just decide, I can't do anything. I'm just going to be in my little bubble here. And I think you're raising this larger question around responsibility to the larger events in the world. And how can people be part of the solution instead of part of the problem by walking by, you know, the bleeding guy on the ground, you know, just ignoring it, you know. And so, you know, part of what we, you know, you've talked about a lot, Chris, is doing the one great work. You know, that's, you know, a lot of us have heeded this call to speak out, to overcome our fears. Our fears of our social fears, right? That maybe when we get experience as a kid playing outside in these social situations live, we get a little exposure to bullies and we have to stand up for ourselves, and we do this in real life. And if kids aren't out really doing that, or they're just doing it online, I think it leads to a little bit of a disability. So we have some things to educate people on, like how to get along, how to communicate, how to, you know, think deeply, how to use critical thinking, how to think in symbols, how do you see that we're being played and tricked, you know, how do you, you know, helping people understand their own psychology and understand themselves. And there's so many ways that we can help each one of us to contribute to good. But I think the point is to do something and not just put the blinders on and walk by as if it's not happening.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. And that really points to the last point, which is sacrifice. You know, there is some level of sacrifice that's involved. You know, the guy in the story, he could have just, you know, threw a blanket on the guy, you know, and left him a little bit of water. You know, that would have been one level of help. But, you know, the way Jesus told the story is, no, he put him on his donkey. And he took him to all the way to the inn. He paid the innkeeper, and then even told the innkeeper, you know, I'm even willing to pay if there's additional expenses. You know, he went the full mile. And so it's really, I think it's calling all of us to go that extra mile. And if you're so fearful of people in the public that you couldn't help one of your neighbors, like, why are you at that level of being so defenseless, is what the question I would ask, you know? And that's where that having self-confidence and being able to defend your own body in your own space and being confident in who you are and knowing that I can comfortably talk to a stranger to a point as long as they don't threaten, you know, and help somebody just because I've had lots of times where someone looks dirty or grungy and then they turn out to be one of the sweetest people ever. And my dad had a story of a friend of his who was walking down the street in Berkeley and had a homeless guy trying to give him his shoes. The homeless guy was trying to give this guy his shoes because this guy had a really ratty pair of shoes on. And the homeless guy's like, oh, I got some shoes that might fit you here. You know, it's like, dude, you're homeless. You're trying to give me shoes. You know, like that's the kind of people we want to be in this world that are showing that in public. And I think one way we can show that is by putting our time and energy, sacrificing our time and energy to try to get a good message out to the world to try to help others. And that's really where we're going with this teaching natural law thing, is just trying to push in whatever we can to encourage more people to really care, you know, and take responsibility.
Yeah. Go ahead. Well, I wanted to add one thing, then I'll be done, is this idea of sacrifice you could see as inconvenience, right? One of the things that we've been lured by is everything is so convenient. You know, fast food, packaged food, 24-hour service, Amazon delivery on weekends, you know, like convenience, ATM, you know, we can deposit our checks on the phone, we can, it's cat wars. You know, and so when I was listening to Derek Bros on some of his recent videos of the conscious resistance, and I recommend people check them out, and he's talking about, you know, these key areas to prepare, you know, yourself to be empowered and strengthened to be in a stronger position when you have to make a hard decision. And that the decisions that we're likely to have to make are going to be decisions that will require, that will inconvenience us. Okay. Like, you know, if you want to eat really healthy food, you're going to have to work harder to get it, you know, than just the convenient food. If you want to keep your money out of banks, you're going to have to do some workarounds. You're going to, you know, do something that is out of your comfort zone, maybe it's going to take more time, you know, and that is really what's necessary, is shift the value of what's important to spend our time on, right? You know, it may be that I lose an hour of paid work in order to, you know, help my neighbor who's fallen out on the front doorstep or something, right? You know, to be willing to put aside our conveniences in order to do the harder but right thing, you know, that to help other people or our world. Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I love that. And goes back to what you said, Chris, and what both y'all talked about and shared with Corey Andrelitz, you know, Freedom Summit, you know, like our self-worth. It's, you know, we can see that within other people as well. And that just builds that, you know, magnetic bond that we have with, you know, life in general. I feel like having reverence for the elements, nature, and the environment we live in, and all this stuff, the other beings, animals, your pets, whatever, right? It's a wonderful thing. And like what you said, Chris, of just like going the extra mile, right? Like sometimes literally, sometimes that can save people's lives. It can be such a transformative catalyst as well. And yeah, going the extra mile might not just be giving a wink and a smile to, you know, the homeless on the street with a, you know, a nickel or quarter or something bigger or shorter, right? But yeah, like spending even like a minute with these people, asking them, hey, like, how's it going? Or just having some kind of quote in mind, you know, bringing up some of that natty law, as Theo Lukes likes to talk about with his website and all that jazz. But you know, so yeah, there's a lot of stuff that we can do with a little bit of extra time that we can take away from our these busy schedules. Yet, you know, people are so busy and in a rush just to go back to their comfort zones and turn on the fucking Netflix and all that jazz, right? So, you know, what is all that, you know, to be, you know what I mean? So things to consider. And yeah, anyways, what's good, Jerry?
Hey, thanks for passing the ball to me. So this kind of just reminded me of the whole Helene situation that happened in North Carolina, right? There's a lot of people in need. And it's like, what's the government doing? Oh, they just they're like the first two people that walk by, right? Like they're ignoring the problem, acting like nothing's going on. So yeah, that kind of just came to mind. And another person on the One Great Work Network, Ron Renard, is actually going there to provide them aid. So there's the link if you want to support him. And he's a fine example of the Good Samaritan. So,
right on. Thanks for sharing that, Jerry. And I think that's a good spot to end this week's show. I really appreciate Derek, Leslie, for coming on and helping supplement our discussion. And Jerry, thanks so much for your help with the show and all the awesome things you do helping get the uploads done every week and helping me learn to shadow host and make a real cool presentation for people to check out. I hope people that watch this are inspired to, take account of your life and take responsibility, for what's going on in the world and your effect on it, and show that care, show it, blast it out there so that when we talk about truth and natural law, people are interested, because you were there for them, then they're going to be there for you. And so that's the standard we need to set. And with that, evil is the destruction of freedom. And we'll be back next week with some kind of show. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to do next week, but we'll do something. Thanks for coming, guys, and have a good week.
Hello, friends. This is Chris Johnson. Evil is the destruction of freedom.
Draw your attention to a couple great things you can check out when you're done watching this show. Pop on over to Twitch and check out Brandon Spencer's 24/7 live stream coming at you with truth, freedom, natural law, all the time, every day. Also want to bring your attention to Mondays. You can check out my good friend Crip Rick on Revolution Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And now, I have a great show for you. Thanks for joining me. Please stop on by to andevil.life and make a small donation or share something from the website. Subscribe to the channels and enjoy the show.